We are meeting at an earlier time than usual. My name is Mark Laredo. I'm the on the Council at Large from Ward 7, Chair of the Land Use Committee. We are being audio taped. I'll take a minute just to introduce my colleagues at the table. To my immediate left is Councilor Susan Albright, Councilor at Large from Ward 2. Next to her is Councilor Jeff Lipoff, Councilor at Large from Ward 8. Next to Councilor Lipoff is Councilor Jeff Crosby, Councilor at Large from Ward 5. All members of the committee. No, you're not a member of the committee.
No,
Jake is a member of the committee. I think that we should not have you. We have Councilor Ruthann Fuller from Ward 7, not a member of the committee. We actually do not have a quorum yet, but I think we can start on this process nevertheless. We have Barney Heath and Alexander Nod from the Planning Department, Rita Young from the Legal Department, John Ogek from Inspectional Services, Dory Zalesnik, Chief Administrative Officer, and our committee clerk, Nadia Khan. So I did send around an agenda on, I think it was, when did I send this out? I think I sent this out on Sunday. I sent it out on Sunday morning. Councilor Auchincloss, Councilor Harney, the most welcome member of the committee. How are you?
You just put it down. That
I only know.
You really are a good guy. Thank you very much.
I'm sorry,
we have been joined by Councilor Harney.
I read you one
thing. You must want something on
this particular line. I'm really good. Why would you be so
skeptical
of that?
This won't get him anything, but appreciate it.
Yeah.
Anybody want my sandwich?
So, I'm going to just briefly summarize what Councilor Auchincloss has reported for the survey results, but when he gets here around 6:30 or so, I'm going to let him develop it more fully. He's gotten 22 responses so far, which has been very good, all things considered. Nadia, if you would, if you suggested we sending out the requests of taking off the people who've responded and see if we get some more, try to build up some data. The biggest takeaways, I think, to your report, no surprise, people don't like the special permit process generally. I mean, I frankly would have been shocked if they said it, they think it's great. No matter what, it's more work for folks. Biggest discontent was the length of time between when they first come to City Hall and then when they first start the public hearing. So that's obviously a fairly long gap. I don't think we got data as to what parts of that were most troubling, but to the extent we can in our deliberations focus on that, we've done some of that already, but we certainly have more to do between the time the application is filed and we start the hearing. In other words, can we speed up the notice process? Can we speed up the time for hearings? That's all things I think we should talk about. And I think he also will report that people generally felt the advice they were getting from city departments was good, but there seemed to be at times a lack of coordination among the departments in terms of what they're being told. I'm going to let him report more on that later. It's a 2-in-2-member survey. There'll be comments. I think he's going to try to build on those as well. But if nothing else, it's a baseline so that if we did a survey 2 years from now, again, to measure satisfaction, we have some way of measuring some results. Admittedly, it's not purely scientific, it's self-correcting in terms of who responds. But that's that, and I'll let him respond to that when we get going.
Quick question?
Sure.
When you talk about the length of people's dissatisfaction with the length of time from submission to hearing, that must vary widely, I'm guessing, depending on how many different committees and commissions and so forth they have to visit. Like, is conservation involved? Is historical commission? And I'm wondering if that information, we know that information.
I don't know, but it might be useful if we can identify the individuals to find out, and I don't know how much we can identify the individual respondents,
right.
But that would be very interesting to go back and look and say, gee, they had to go to four different places.
Right.
And that would be useful.
You said there were 22 respondents?
Yeah.
How many people in this room took the survey?
No. These are people who applied.
Oh, applied. Okay. Because I and some others, I assume, went through when you sent it to us. But that wasn't included.
No.
Okay, good.
No,
good.
This is people who applied for a special permit who had their comments.
No, I understand. He did send it to all of us and asked us to do it too. So.
Okay. Well, I'm going to let Jake, when he gets here, fill us in more. I don't want to preempt what he did, and he really deserves tremendous credit for taking this on. So what I thought we'd begin with was the discussion of the need for engineering and fire reviews at the time of special permit application. I think we were talking about that last time, and we were in the middle of discussions about that. Alexander, maybe you want to pick up a little bit as to where you thought we were and what we as a committee think would be good going forward.
So I thought it was agreed in general that for simple projects, we would not make them file with engineering. And we know, as staff want to talk with engineering or fire, as staff we might talk with engineering and fire if we think there was an issue such as the slope of the lot could create some drainage issues, but in general, we wanted to err on the side of not having them do perk tests and drainage runoff analysis prior to their approval, because they can do all that stuff after approval prior to the issuance of a building permit.
Okay. So, Deb, I think you had at one point a question or a comment about what do we do in a more difficult situation. I think it was like Christina Street, for example, without discussing the merits.
I think the key here is defining what do we mean by a simple project, and where do we draw that line? Because certainly there are sites with really difficult topography and geology matters too, where maybe what we need to have is a standard paragraph in what you bring to us that describes why we don't need, or why you think we don't need to have any comments from engineering. And there's a difference between a set of sort of qualitative comments that where the engineering department and planning department might describe the site and its significant characteristics, versus doing a whole set of drainage, doing a whole drainage analysis. And there's going to be some gray area, right? So how much of the land is being taken up, how much underground work is there, maybe, excessively deep and large foundations are going to displace, and how close are they getting to the water table? Do we need to know that? Is that a concern? And, we have these ordinances, which I'm hoping we're going to get to in sort of clean up design standards for stormwater, where we say a couple things. One, there's what we're trying to achieve in terms of our stormwater regulations and how much we're supposed to keep on site. That's one thing. And topography and geology matter, as well as the height of the groundwater. The other thing is we have this ordinance that says that no development is supposed to shed water as a result of the development more than the existing condition onto another person's property. That's a place where I think we get lost in the approval. I just don't think a lot of times we're thinking about that. We're not talking about it. And, the people are on a pretty regular basis. We've seen a lot more where the developer, builder, homeowner comes in and they want to level their lot and put in retaining walls. Doesn't even really matter how big they are. They're changing the way the land works. And we're not really talking about that. So, and again, I don't think someone has to do a really in-depth engineering analysis. But a qualitative description of the factors that exist and that we might take into account as well, is this a good idea?
Okay. So, great point. How complicated is that to do?
So, I guess my thinking is that almost every site can be engineered to retain their water on site and to minimize any runoff and impacts on the abutters. And that's the engineering division's job, is to make sure that happens at the time of building permit. And I'm not sure it's really worth it for the land use community to focus on that too much when we know it will happen in engineering's review.
Bingo, can I follow on that?
Sure. This is good to explain.
Yeah. That's the level that somebody building a new home have to take their drainage is above and beyond mm-hmm. what other municipalities do. Mm-hmm. I did build my own house. I know what I put in to maintain water. And it's expensive and it's extensive, and you're not going to get past engineering without doing it the right way. I don't think it's something that we need to concern ourselves with.
Unless we think they're not doing it right or they're making mistakes, I'm not really sure why you should be
right.
You know, looking at it.
But one thing related to that,
as a non-land use person, the least knowledgeable person in the room, what I find is that the neighbors are intensely interested when they see the design. They're very nervous about the issue, so they mm-hmm. want it to be discussed at land use so that they're reassured. So if you take it out of land use, you have to have a way to send that message really effectively.
Well, we often do include a condition that even if we haven't received an engineering review as part of the review process, in their board order, they're saying prior to issuance of a building permit, an engineering review must be completed.
I'm not sure that would do it when, particularly when it's clear even to a layperson that, boy, that we could really have a runoff issue here.
It's not
that
what they're taking it out.
That one sentence may not be there's a public use to the land use.
I just think if you go that route, you just have to think it through somehow
so that there's a messaging.
All runoff will be contained on site, and plans will be reviewed by the city of Rome. Let me hear from John, and then Susan. Well, I think there's a middle road here. Every new house, almost a new house, has to go to the DRC. We've been out of the DRC and it gets looked at. I think the staff, I mean, the FD model, the engineering. In terms of doing the DRC, it's based on the quantity, based on the water table. Whether or not they believe it's something that the board and their entity should be worried about to make the situation and move forward. Engineering is a far different view of what should be being done here immediately.
What does that mean, John?
It means they don't believe they're responsible for anything. That's the way it's been. You just say, oh, water books, they have a problem runoff, I have these problems. It's a one of the insurance engineers. They take the engineer's drawing and they approve it or they disapprove it. They tell them that they disapprove it. Yeah, we did call it, but water runoff has now increased. For example, Oakville. You have to know there's a high water table there. Mm-hmm. And you're engineering the problem. Land use is a special problem. Sure enough, there's a high water table, you know, here. You can also put some of these boats on the pond or a pond or something, right? I mean, every single house is a description of a boat. You're just moving the water table up and out.
Mm-hmm.
I think that is some consideration to, you know, if you're going to give them an exception to zoning, that the land use committee should know about. So, I mean, I think that, you know, we could see that, well, we know that there's high water table, you know, here. We need them to do some sort of a engineering study to tell us what is the water table. You people should make some adjustments based on that.
Mm-hmm.
And what we find is we see some creeper permits. Top of foundation wall 105. Then we go up the field after they put the foundation. Top of foundation wall 108.
Yeah.
Because they ran into, well, I could have told you a year and a half ago, we did that water turned down for any foot basin. So, I mean, so what's happening is the houses start popping up. And if that's a special permit, you know, we have to stop, we stop a lot of jobs down there because they're, because now there's time on dirt next to their house because they want to raise it for their own water table problem. Well, your platform man knows the water table problem. You should be accepted from it.
So I I would say that's a big project in an area where we know there are issues. So that's a project we would send to engineers from the beginning.
And there are perk tests that they have to come in with the engineer. There's all that, isn't there?
Yeah, but the perk test, you don't always do a perk test for every type of thing you're in here for here. And perk tests should be done during, I'm told, particular months of the year. Mm-hmm. And you get things like droughts of this year. So it's going to add a lot of time if you insist on a perk test for every special permit.
Well, no, not every special permit. And we're talking about two different things here. I mean, complete.
Perk tests are relatively unusual. They're not using, you know, septic tank or anything. What should happen is that, you know, they have to, for example, in a place like that, they take these footprints of the existing house, and they say, well, they're not adding more than 400 square feet or 4% of that, so they don't need to have those plans. My view is, and try to listen, baloney. You're building a new house. This city is a big problem. All of this city, a lot of hills, a lot of lowlands, you should have to buy plans.
So now
to get a building permit, they would. There's different things here. There's, if you put an addition on, but if it's a tear down, I mean, you've got to come with a plan, don't you?
Not unless
you've
seen your former by 400 square feet.
Susan, hold on. You've got a lot of people. Is it not the board to do form of the site
condition?
We want
to make sure the board is informed.
Mm-hmm.
The double differentials that they are because of, you know, it's
well, exactly.
You can't put in the basement, there's a water case or something.
That makes
you
sense.
You know that.
Yep.
You're living next to a pond, right. You should know that. I mean, that's something, you know, I think that any time you tear down a house and build a new one, everything's new.
So, hold on, Susan, you
want to... So, just kind of think back of, over the years, of what permits we might have asked for changes on, because we knew something about the drains, either the design or the arrangement or the landscaping, or did we, thinking back on that, did the engineering impact how our approval plan?
Hold on, just one second. I'm sorry,
I'm just thinking of a project that I think the architect is here. Didn't we make some adjustments to the Dartmouth Street, the new house that exceeded FAR because of the butter that the rear was concerned about?
Yeah.
Runoff and added more trees and
yeah. So I think that knowing these things might have an impact on how we rule on some of these projects. And so not knowing it might be a problem.
No.
So may I?
Mm-hmm.
But I do think we might be coming to the same place. But perhaps an example. Because you did an example in here for us. It might be interesting to have an example of what you consider a simple project. I'm not going to call it small, but simple.
Mm-hmm.
So there's flat land, it's sandy soil, you know, whatever. And what would you, what would your description look like?
Suggest.
Right.
Yep.
What does your paragraph look like? What key points are you going to hit? So that, you know, soils and geology sort of known in the area, wetlands, groundwater table, and then what's relevant to the relief? So it's done at least, you know, they're asking for FAR, and we're in a really wet area, and you're filling up the site with a whole lot more buildings. You know, maybe not. Maybe that's not the way we should be going. So I don't know if that, and then for a project that's maybe on the line, where it's a small house project and so forth, but you're in a difficult site. You know, then how would you be advising us? I think in any case, we don't need to have a fully engineered stormwater catchment plan. But remember, this site has a lot of legs close to the surface, high water table and so forth. They're going to be asking for an overflow, everybody asks for an overflow, but they're not going to be able to contain perhaps their 100-year storm condition on the site. I mean, that happens sometimes, and you have to get an overflow, and the overflow kicks in at some condition, and every site isn't going to be able to meet that condition, and so they'll be getting a waiver for, I don't know who gives them that waiver, so that's not our job.
We need to talk about that, though.
So let's try to think about... Let's try to think.
It's relevant to what they're asking. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Let's just try to think about. We're trying to develop a policy here. So I'm hearing, I think, at the table, some consensus that we do not need full-blown engineering reports in every project. Period. Is that agreed?
Certainly not on every project. Right. No.
I'm hearing also some consensus that there are certain projects that, at the minimum, we need some engineering information, even if it's not fully designed, so that we can help craft a couple of things. One, address concerns that abutters might have when they come to land use, and two, at least help craft solutions at the special permit stage, rather than having them go through a special permit and have John shut them down, and now they're back trying to amend the special permit. I don't think that would be good at all. So it seems to me for certain projects, we do need to address the engineering issues in land use, at least to some degree. The operative question then is, do we leave it to the staff to decide when we need to do that or not? And then if they presume right, as they will most of the time, not an issue, and on the occasional situation where there is an issue, we may, you know, have to hold something over for more than one session because it hasn't been addressed, and we say in this instance we need more information. I mean, is that a viable solution? Greg.
Sorry, Henry. One way of having a little bit of the insight from a council perspective might be at that early stage. It might not only apply to engineering. One of the things that we're thinking about is whether there should be maybe like a single counselor, either the chair or somebody on the committee, who could be kind of maybe involved in the preliminary and just be able to like identify just from that perspective, knowing that perspective, that you know what, actually, this is one where it might be more important. The counselors might be more eager. I don't know if that would be helpful to you guys, but sometimes I know you guys think that it's all... Well, sometimes you guys think that it's all set, and you come, and then we raise these objectives, and I know that everybody feels that's late in the game. So it might not be relevant to the engineering side, but it's certainly true of some of the other issues. So that's why I'm wondering if that person was already...
Oh, sorry, go ahead.
I think that's something that should be done in DRC. If they go into special funds,
right.
They're going to go to DRC, and those are pertinent questions to ask them, you know, the site conditions, you know, the water table is, that kind of stuff. One, we know it's just different parts of town. They may not. You say, well, you're building an Oak Hill, it's a high water table. Just warning you, we're going to need some information here. I mean, I don't want you down there, like you said before, and talk foundation down there when you designed it at 105, and people make sure it's not screaming because now the house is moving, you know, over the top of them. And we get too many of those, unfortunately. That's it. One guy cut the foundation down by 2 feet.
I mean, it just looked like it was going.
And that was a by-right project. Do you want to jump in? Your question? I'm going to open it up because I don't... Yeah. Just from my more recent experience, we withdrew an application based on a complaint that a neighbor had that they thought that there was going to be, you know, a lot of water runoff. Now, it's a little bit different than the typical situation, but my point is that before we go to a DRC unit, we come into those DRCs having vetted our project with the neighbors. I mean, in fact, I think we've come on several occasions with letters of support from neighbors so that they're seeing the plans and all of the impact of the project so that they're not, way down the road in the process when they show up at a land use hearing and then suddenly the neighbors just saw the plan a week before. So I've just done it that way because I don't want to come into land use and have some kind of surface take place. So
we happen to think that's good policy, Peter, but you may be the exception rather than the rule to that. And we, as you know, often of folks who come in who've not talked to their neighbors much at all. For better or worse.
So you've hit it on a theme here. I mean, and I think we're going to keep coming back to it. If we want to streamline, if we want to make things better, if we want to do things different, who's going to be responsible for taking on certain steps? And that's exactly at the DRC. This could be done,
that's what they're there for.
That's what they're there for, yeah. And they would make these kind of recommendations if they understand these things. And take it one step further to some other things that we're going to talk about. And I call it the traffic council effect, where you know maybe what comes out of all of these conversations is that there are certain maybe jumping out of here, but certain kinds of I am okay. I just put on my mind certain kinds of petitions. A small addition, a porch, something that's encroaching, that's why it's coming, but it's reasonable. Things that you guys can look at and say, this really doesn't need to come to land use. And that's the kind of thing I hope eventually we can talk about.
We certainly are going to address that, and I didn't mean
that's okay. No, I knew I was jumping, but...
Let's focus. We have engineering and fire. Maybe we can try to do the fire one first. Is there anybody really feels... Fire, I think it comes in when you have what, like a weird subdivision or something like that?
If a truck is more than 100 feet off the street, or, the topography makes us cognizant that access is going to be difficult, or if it's more than a three-family or more.
So are we, let me put this out there, are we comfortable as a committee giving our planning department essentially discretion as to whether or not they're going to ask for some kind of fire review before it comes up? Does that make sense?
Yeah. We don't get very much.
We don't get very much. I mean, fire is not an issue typically.
This is the rules of this.
Okay. So let's at least start there, that going forward, the fire issue will be one that you, in your discretion, or your staff and its discretion will look at.
Has that delayed anything though? By getting that?
No, but it's just one more. I mean, I'm just, what we do. I agree as far as engineering, I don't want to make the judgment call. As the chair, though, I'm very happy it's on an informal basis, and I think you do this anyway. If you think there's something that's kind of on the edge, you know, just give me a call on it.
Sure. And you guys also see the DRC schedule for the next week. So if it's an address where you have particular concerns, let me know before Wednesday and we'll...
Yeah, but I'm not going to have... I mean, personally, I look at that gimmick...
And I think that's fine. You really shouldn't have. We send out the DRC to city staff on, the Friday in advance. Everyone has plenty of time to look at the project and decide whether or not they need to attend the DRT, and we have enough time to pull in people when we think we need to. And
so let me ask you, go ahead, Roseanne and then Jay.
Just remind me, on large projects, I've certainly seen when the sausage is being made early in the process, the fire department comes in and their opinion changes the design in significant ways. It has happened. Does that mean that you guys would flag that early, have that discussion with the fire department internally, and resolve all that before it ever gets to land use? Question mark? Or just walk me through when fire department does make a difference.
I can say that
because I have seen it where it's come a little later, that design has had to change kind of during the land use process. Mm-hmm. So it may be helpful to talk about how you'll handle it for those projects where it does make a difference.
We've also had rear lots where the width of the driveway and the placement of parking spaces make a difference to the fire department, and sometimes that's in negotiation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that's, I suppose you could do that negotiation.
But does that happen before the land that grants you?
That is always our goal, yes. But the site plan doesn't get to you until we are happy with it, and that means fire access is appropriate.
And it's usually that that doesn't happen, where somehow the sausage is still being made.
Mm-hmm.
And in that case, it's really important to hear, to let the land use to hear from the fire department while they're doing their work. So it's just, again, I was saying, it's not that the fire department's comments never are relevant to land use. Again, it's that there's, whether it's engineering or fire department, there are some occasions of land use will want to understand it in some detail.
Sometimes
and we're very dependent on you to flag those for them.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes there's a disagreement in that regard.
Mm-hmm.
And the petitioner doesn't want to do what the planning department wants them to do. And it comes to us that that disagreement any better than the plan.
Well, if there's a disagreement, you certainly need to hear what fire or engineering is saying.
Yeah.
And I think that's
the
disagreement
we raise in the memo.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Leah.
Sometimes there's some disagreement between the land use committee and the fire department.
Right.
It's the width of the driveway,
right.
Generally.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what I was just going to say. Yeah.
So,
yeah.
We're trying to avoid people having to do certain things as a matter of course. Are we comfortable with, and I'm asking this, I'm putting it out there for the committee, are we comfortable with the committee giving our planners discretion as to whether a more detailed review is required or not? I'm hearing nods of yes, which is fine. There's two caveats, I guess I'd say that. One, the petitioners seem to be aware that if an issue does come up at land use, and they have to now go back and get that engineering review, that could actually take longer,
mm-hmm.
could delay them. And two, I guess, as a learning piece for us, I would ask if we do go to that you err, at least for the near future, on inclusion of engineering and inclusion of fire rather than exclusion. And then we can, as a matter of refining this, you know, look at experience and say, no, we really were overly inclusive. We don't need it. Is that workable?
Yeah.
Okay. Is that okay with the committee? Yes, no?
With that qualifying statement, I really would like there to be in the initial reports or as a sample in advance of doing that, whether it's something we're working on or not, you know, how you would advise us and hitting on those key points and talking about why it is or is not relevant to the release being sought.
Okay.
John, and then go ahead.
I think another idea could work. When someone comes to the EIC, sometimes they come fairly quickly, other times it takes a few moments. Yeah, a questionnaire might not be a bad thing to put out. Come to the EIC with a questionnaire. Do you know if you're throwing it? Do you know
mm-hmm.
high water table? You know, do you have any reason why this project might need fire access? You know, so that kind of stuff, so they can check the box. And you know, then you say, well, look, there's an issue with the access. You know, do you see this as meaning on-site drainage or not? You know, and I think, you know, before they came, if they came with prepared to answer those questions, you would see that administratively.
Mm-hmm.
You know, any of those, to check the earth and boxes,
maybe rather than check the box, John, it might be something that we say to applicants. At the DRT, we are going to inquire about,
right.
Because they may not know
right.
a lot, but we're going to ask about, you know, drainage and other things, you know, you need to be prepared to just answer that. I think that's a little more user.
You usually have a pretty good conversation with them before they get to DRT, so right. there are questions that
whoever is using it, whether it's the applicant or whether it's the DRT staff, because when you have that, you don't miss stuff. I mean, it's basic, but it's one of those things that actually, you know, throughout medicine actually now, we're trying to use checklists and it's really brought down a tremendous amount of error. So it's a good tool. Obviously, you want to make it in the right hands.
If you have a comment, ask them the question.
Do we have a checklist out here?
Not at
that
level. I mean, engineering has a checklist that they.
But when you meet with applicants, do you have an internal checklist for your staff to go through things, or something that applicants can do?
No.
Yeah.
So I think you're hearing from at least taking a medical
aspect.
Professional,
I can tell you that you know.
If you have a checklist, but
you're a
PRC, you don't.
I mean, I know that my colleagues and I have always resisted, like, oh, well, I'll always think of that, you know, but if you don't see it, you don't always think of it, and it's actually been amazing what the research has shown, that, you know, line infections, you know, it's just incredible. Operative, it's the surgical checklist, you know, actually a mutant resident, the Pool Blondie, written extensively about it. It's really incredible how it cuts down, it just systematizes a process, so... Minor,
any reason we can't try that?
So we do have a DRT sheet where we take notes on the DRT, so we can just, you know, add a couple lines for some of these.
I think Greg is talking about something a little bit different. I think he's talking about a checklist that would be available to your staff uniformly and to applicants about things that are going to be discussed at any DRT. And if the answer is not applicable, it's not applicable. Is that what you're
saying? Yeah, I was just really following up on John's comment,
so,
but yeah.
So I think that part of the DRT is determining the scope of the project and whether they even want to move forward. So now you're adding yet another layer for them to come in and give them a checklist. It's starting to sound like a building permit. Did you look through all these things before you come see us? So I think it becomes even more intimidating for them.
So when do you want to do it, Barney?
Well, the DRT is an opportunity to find out what the project is.
Okay.
And the staff determines what the next steps are and what you need to come back with.
At the DRT, yes.
Could it be at the DRT that you go through the checklist?
I would do it at the DRT.
That's fine. Yeah.
I don't think we need to involve the applicant.
But so the staff knows to go to, we think we need engineering. Or we don't need engineering, but we do need fire.
They don't know what they need, so they need
the staff.
That's
what defines the problem. Right? I've got a leaking checklist.
I'm talking about the letter. I was talking about the letter to the neighbors.
Oh, yeah.
The form. Right, the form letter.
Let's stay on this, folks. We have so much. We could be here for days if we don't keep focused.
So you missed that letter. That letter is on there, right?
Alexander and Barney, I hear what you're saying. You don't want to overburden somebody walking in before they're even there. But can you develop, presumably you have something already to some degree, but can you develop a formal checklist that if it's helpful, but just, and that can even be circulated among some of the other departments to make sure that you're asking or covering all the issues? Okay.
I guess I just want to put this out there. I think it's obvious, but, you know, this process of design and construction is iterative. You don't know what you don't know until you sit down and begin to talk about it, and then you learn something new and try to address that, and then you might learn something, two more new things after that. So there's sometimes a process that necessarily takes longer as you're trying to figure out on that. It depends on who the applicant is, whether or not they have professional assistance, all those kinds of things. So I know our objective is to streamline the process, but I think, you know, I know there is a process. I've heard actually very little criticism about the DRTs. Well, I've actually heard no criticism about the DRTs per se, that it's a really helpful process. And I understand what our objectives are here. I think it's good conversation to be having.
I'm not trying to suggest how they run DRT. That's not my goal. I'm just suggesting, so I follow up. Greg has made this suggestion about how you try to improve your processes. It's straightforward. Can I suggest that we agree to try this trial change to fire and engineering reports and maybe do it for 6 months? And just evaluate afterwards. Not to say we wouldn't continue it, but let's let's step back in 6 months and see how that's played out. Is that fair? Okay. So we've covered what I think is point seven. Point eight, the planning department has suggested an addendum to the zoning review memo, which is attachments A and B, about next steps and notes that must be submitted at the time of special permit filing. Have folks had a chance to look at that? Mm-hmm. Do you have any comments? Anybody?
So the zoning, I didn't use my land use materials. I've gone to some drawer way in the back of my brain.
So the idea here is that there's going to be a zoning review memo no matter what, anytime somebody does something. This is just a form that goes to the applicant that says these are the next steps if you're going to go forward. And it's just, I think, designed to be informative. Is that, Alexander, is that right?
Yeah.
Actually, I found these very useful. And a tiny point. Number five, because I have clients who ask me stuff like this.
What's number five, Jim?
Number five on attachment A and B.
Yep. Okay.
From both. A floor area ratio worksheet signed and stamped by a design professional. This is really small, but well, it can go on your site survey, and oftentimes the civil site will ask the architect or somebody else to provide the numbers for the house, or you know what they do, they just, otherwise they take it right off the assessor's database, which is a different conversation.
So Deb, what are you asking for them to do?
I'm asking to try to let people know in a maybe friendlier layperson language way. I'm thinking of some clients who come in and they do some of this intake on their own homeowners, and you know, some of the language in here isn't obvious to them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's obvious to us now because we're doing this. But.
So I think the point is to make that particular
piece. Prepared by a design professional, not necessarily signed and stamped.
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's the homeowner coming in and doing it themselves, but everybody has to get a certified plot plan, you know, so just.
Why don't we, John?
I won't accept an API calculation done by the homeowner.
Okay.
It has to be done in standby design professional because that's the only way you have to certify.
Can that be a civil engineer, a surveyor, on the certified plot plan?
Yeah. They're signing the letter of the stamp of plan they're working on.
Maybe you can define design professional, which is the architect or registered engineer.
This AI calculator on the website, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you have to have somebody that's professional.
No, I understand.
Yeah. I mean, I have one today, and just saying somebody has, well, of course, it's wrong.
Yeah,
I mean, I
only write four lines. Maybe you want to put a statement on the website that this is just for general purposes.
For purpose of our memo, design professional. Just make it clear, design professional is either a registered architect or an engineer.
Okay.
Period. Okay. Okay.
On the attachment A, number 7, mm-hmm. The three letters, et cetera, the ECC,
mm-hmm.
Would make me very uncomfortable. I think homeowners occasionally look at this. If you don't look with what ones might be for a simple house, other than the three you have to list, if you could do the comprehensive list,
come out of the DMT.
You're better off.
Okay. Where are you? I'm sorry.
Number 7.
Yeah.
It says et cetera.
Okay.
And I'd rather just have the full list. Yeah.
However,
the DRT will
tell them which one.
Scope that out for them.
That's
yeah, they're going to scope it out for them.
But if you don't have the list there, then people don't even know what they may be getting into.
We don't want to scare them because they may be very irrelevant to what their project is.
Can I
think you?
Then even just say three common ones are or something, but people need to know something.
They're not going to remember from the DRT. They're going to go back to the document and use it as a checklist. And that's what you're trying to help them do. Sean?
I think one of the things, I think it's not kind of misunderstood. DIC is even described as an informal process.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't want to get, you don't want to get away from that. You know, a lot of times you're working ideas with somebody. You can do this, you can do that, this way, right? Alexander, this is what the conversation is about. It's just this instead of this, you know, need a special permit, that kind of thing. So, I mean, you know, it is an informal process where they just gathering all kinds of information. There are 5-7 people from the state on at the table, feeding information of ammunition, taking copious notes, of course, to understand where they're going, to the general variants, or they're going to special permits. Or, quite honestly, if you give this picture as a right, you're always happy here. I'm going there, then. You know, I mean, that's just the way it is. I mean, why would you want it to be tied down the process? It doesn't make that much difference. And a lot of stuff is, well, what if? What if this and what if that? And, you know, their staff is terrific at talking to people through these wide areas and giving them better ideas, perhaps, that they won't have to go through this process. I'm not criticizing the process. I'm saying, why don't we do it if you didn't have to?
Right.
And so, I mean, that's where this is at. So I think, it's, you know, many of these DIPs, if you see them now, they never see them again.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they just, no, I'm going to not doing
that. Okay.
So, I mean, much, you know, we complete the same threefold process. And where it might change that, some people just won't go to a
formal
process, no matter what
the conversation. So, we under, and I think, John, that's the first point, that it's an informal process that's meant to be guided. But what we're saying here in attachments A and B is you've got your zoning work done. If you want to apply for a special permit, this is what you have to do. So, I would suggest a couple of things. In 6 and 7, where you say, as applicable, I might say, if needed, and even explain why it might or might not be needed. And 8 is 2 electronic copies of the application with all above attachments. I thought that was a little bit confusing, frankly. We're telling them that they have to file it electronically only, or do they file it paper and electronically?
Paper and electronically.
Okay. So I think you might want to start off by saying, introductory phase, you need to file the following documents, 1 original paper copy and 2 in an electronic version, USB or CD, whatever you mean by that. You know, just in simple format.
Yep.
And then 2 copies. Obviously, the filing fee is not done in electronic version, so you want to think through. You need to have a filing fee, and in addition, you're filing paper copies and electronic copies of the following information.
Mm-hmm.
I think that would be helpful.
Okay.
Well, yeah.
12.
I don't know. I was going
to
ask.
There were 15 before. You only knocked it down to 12. Seems like in this day and age, that's a lot of paper that maybe.
What's the planning department? Whatever.
So the clerk wants to keep 2 copies typically. See 8 people on the committee, and then the planning department often gets 1, and then if needed, 1 of those goes to engineering.
Yeah.
Or anybody else.
Dory, I'll say this, it is extraordinarily hard to read the plans on a tablet or a computer screen. At least I found it extraordinarily hard. It's the one thing I find, I mean, really difficult on this. And a lot of times you're reading the memo, maybe it's on a tablet or maybe it's in hard copy, and you have the plans next to you and you're trying to go back and forth. I don't know how others do it, but that's a little bit how I do it. So that's why I think the plans are there. Yeah, I know you're okay. There's only one person in the committee who pays attention to those plans, and we know who that is, Councilor Clunder.
That's why we
value you so highly. Listen, folks, any other comments on anything else in these documents?
Can I just ask?
Yeah, please.
A and B, the difference there was is one for one purpose and another for another, or is this
right? So these are more complicated projects where I've listed a number of other things that we might require, and typically we scope that out in the DRT, and they would know they might need a class schedule or a transportation schedule.
So you're saying that A would probably go for the simpler project, B would go for the...
I would say A goes for almost all the home projects, unless it's like a real life subdivision or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. Okay. So we're good with the revisions. Does that work for you as a staff? Okay. The next attachment C is a revised land use memo that Alexandra and her team have developed. And I'd like to get some comments on that. Can you maybe walk us through a little bit what you've changed and why?
Sure. So the intent was just to pare down your typical land use memo for a smaller project. So I think we just added a little bit more into the executive summary, or I think more of a more robust project description there, as well as dealt with the land uses. I just made no changes to the issues for consideration. I took out the sort of characteristics of the site and neighborhood section, and I just felt like if they're significant, I would raise them in the executive summary. Mm-hmm. Took out the building and site design, because that was sort of moved up to the executive summary. And then, you know, keep the other reviews and the recommendations as appropriate.
I don't know why petitioner's responsibility, but if an application is not complete, you should be hearing it.
That's true, but sometimes, you know, an abutter may come forward and we may decide a landscape plan will be required prior to the public hearing. Or there are cases where they have something that could be submitted that could be helpful. You know, we might ask for a study of the height of the third floor or something.
Okay. I hear that. So in other
words, almost always completed.
Something that would not be required, but you're saying, look, we really
in
think this would be helpful. Okay, that's fair. Folks, Deb?
So I guess we'd have to change the ordinance to avoid this. So one thing that hit me with this, I think you're saying that you had the council order one, the council, report to us. One way versus another way if you're making an administrative decision. And then
attachment C is that. This zoning reform brings that on ever. So
this is just a memo.
It's sort of a more relevant to today's field, what we do today.
Okay, I was looking at these as comparatives, because then I was thinking if you're recommending an administrative approval,
Something else that Mark had asked me to do separately. What if staff were to be doing administrative approvals for projects in the future, what would they look like?
And the,
that's the reason for that is still a separate memo.
Even if we do not change our process, I thought it would be for me at least it's highly educational to know what would be different under an envisioned process of some administrative review versus what we do now, so that we may find things that are suggested for administrative review that we say we ought to be doing for everything, or we ought to be doing for a more simple project, regardless of whether we go to an administrative review system. So that was my objective there, and they did that at my explicit request.
So she just takes the typical memo that the planning department prepares for the council and streamlines it a little bit more.
Okay.
So for a simple project.
There's a few people. So Greg, then Rita.
The only comment I have is that looking at this from a litigation point of view, I'm looking for an administrative record, and unfortunately, you may find that in somebody who gets up as an ordinary household person, they're not quite sure of how to present the sorts of things they need, and it comes to mind the FAR and what the surrounding neighborhood looks like and whether or not it's consistent. So I think you've got to tear it down, but I still think if you get into a fight, and most of the time you don't, but if you get into a fight, having an administrative record that is the planning memo, these things go in as part of the documentation. And for example, in the Cherry Street, that case did not go to trial. and the entire case was determined on the filings that were in front of the Land Use Committee.
So is the proposed executive summary as attachment C to change? Is that sufficient for your purposes as a litigator?
I think depending on the relief that's being granted, and I'll go back to the FAR, the relief that's being granted, if it tells you that you want to look at the neighborhood context, if we get into a context zoning situation, I think the planners need to give you the context, because I'm not sure if the ordinary planner will be able to do it. Not relevant for every case, but, and the executive summaries are great, but I just don't want to completely ignore a necessary criteria, finding, or discussion in a written format. The landscaping, I really don't care about.
Or is executive summary sufficient written finding or discussion?
It might be, but again, it has to be somewhere, and I don't know if
well, let's not call it executive summary, then. Let's call it something else.
Well, maybe, I noticed that in the executive summary, like the first paragraph really is a repetition of the neighborhood and zoning. And the site, characteristics of site and neighborhood, it's basically all. And what I was going to say initially is, I think this is nice because it's like, it's so repetitive in the usual memo. So we have a summary and then we have it all again, and it's not that much different.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
Perhaps no summary, you just take what you've written as summary and you just, you know, kind of identify each paragraph as the different components that are.
I don't want to put in a component that's not relevant, but if there's a relevant component that the planning department can say.
Maybe it should be labeled as such,
yeah.
So that it's easy to find.
So can I see? Go ahead.
Just on this point. So I was going to say what we just said, but from a non-legal point of view. When I read it, what I saw is on page 4 or 5, the building and site design, we took that material and embedded it in the executive summary.
Yep.
But the neighborhood and zoning and the site was not embedded.
I feel like most of the council understands the neighborhood and the site.
So,
maybe not.
So,
maybe you like that.
My understanding is when we're doing things like the new zoning ordinance and patterns, that what we're really trying to do is be very sensitive about existing sites and having what we approve fit in really well with what's there. So to me, it was very confusing to eliminate what's surrounding these things, whether it's in a separate section like this, or you do as Greg just suggested, where those ideas are embedded in your first paragraph here, but you skipped them.
Yeah.
You didn't say that there's a green line and the neighborhood primarily larger single family.
But the site information is in here.
Let me suggest, can I suggest something here?
The neighborhood and zoning and the
neighborhood and site. Site is the first paragraph.
Can I make a suggestion here that combines some of these thoughts? I think the idea is we don't want to be repetitive. That's really the thought. At the same time, we need a document that some land court judge or appellate judge can pick up, look at, and say, get it, covers it. So maybe rather than executive summary, we have something called discussion, and we have headers. You know, like the headers would be things like, you know, release thought, neighborhood, zoning, site, whatever those are, as kind of narrative headers to break up the description.
Mm-hmm.
But that wouldn't involve more writing, and you'd have a template to do.
Mm-hmm.
It would flow more naturally. I think that would accomplish what Roseanne is driving at. Roseanne, I think that accomplishes what you're trying to get at.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be repetitive, but I think for you guys on land use to look really carefully at what's written in A under neighborhood and zoning and site. Alexandra is, I think, is suggesting slimming that way back and having less information in here. And I look to you guys as much as, again, to me, not on land use. I thought that information was very relevant. We just thought it was from a legal point of view, but I wasn't coming in.
Could you take it?
And I think we would. You know, if say the petition was for a third story, and all the surrounding houses were three-story structures, I think we would note that. In this case, I might not have carried over the sentence, but I think we would put in a sentence on neighborhood context.
Well, either this is the role model in the unit, or it's not the role model in the unit. So I
think I'm hearing from at least several colleagues that this is a good start, but we could use some additional revision. I think the nomenclature, the headings make a difference. The formatting for ease of read makes a difference, at least to me. And I would like Rita to look at this.
Okay.
Or someone else in legal, because I really want to, I think it's very important for us to think about this at the back end. If our orders are challenged, what do our memoranda look like? And, you know, we want to bulletproof them as best we can. Go ahead.
Doesn't the board order? The board order also makes findings that would be relevant.
But we need to show some deliberation. And we want enough in there so there's a record. The board order has a few findings that we make, but then I think Rita would need to say, well, you know, I'm telling some judge what this property is about and why we got here, and you need a bit of a flavor to do that.
Yeah, because you make a determination that it's not in derogation of the surrounding neighborhood. Well, sometimes you lie.
Could
you
identify that and find that?
What's the benefit? Go ahead.
Because, you know, while I like the kind of swimming, I'm mindful of two things. One is obviously the requirement of what we might need for legal purposes, but secondly, with some of our, so that would argue for just getting rid of the executive summary, just going through the detailed section by section, which would be fine with me, because then I wouldn't have to read both. But then I'm mindful, and I've asked Ruth Ann perhaps about this, like if you're not on the committee, do you normally look at the executive summary? Because
no,
if our colleagues
do
that, then they need that too.
What I tend to look at is when your votes aren't unanimous, then I go back and I actually, if it's unanimous, frankly, I defer to you guys.
But
whatever.
The content is non.
That's a good way to do it, though.
That's how you read. Yeah. I Googled math at first to kind of get a sense, and then I actually do have to read this so that I'm just less familiar to take out sit on my
Can I make a suggestion, Alexander, if you wouldn't mind for our next meeting trying to revise this a little bit in some consultation with Rita, circulated to everybody, but I actually would ask that maybe it gets circulated to everybody else in the council just for their input. Would you find this format helpful? Particularly if not a member of the Land Use Committee, and if so, if not, why not? What's missing for you? Because I agree.
The whole town forgets the memo. Yeah. The whole town forgets the memo.
They're all welcome to join us at the meeting.
Yeah, but they're not. They can find out if
but we can put that on the NNR or something like that. Take a look at the.
So I'm gonna skip over what administrative approvals would look like. I think it's important for us to have that discussion, but I want to go to two things. Revise the format of a council order. We have a new proposal here in attachment E, and I do want to give Jake a few minutes to talk about survey results. So can we go to attachment E, please? I think precedent, by the way, is not relevant.
So what's that?
The word precedent?
Precedent.
I could be wrong, but
great reason.
Where are you?
On two. In conditions precedent. I think it's
just
how
it is. Okay,
and what is it? But that's an easy one.
President?
Other, you know, we all
felt like
so,
president, like President quote, Trump.
No political discussion.
Yeah, that was levity. That was
good. Level. Yeah.
That was permanent.
We have enough levity in our political situation. So,
he doesn't need any permits for anything.
Attachment E. Alexander, page one is really what exactly what we do currently.
Mm-hmm.
Except that you are getting better at actually not just making the conclusion as the finding, but giving at least a little bit of bone, a little bit of muscle to it, you know, so that someone picking it up who may not have bothered reading the whole planning memo has a sense from the findings of what it is. So I see them as both complementary. I don't want to overload it, but I think you need to do something that tells the reader of the finding or the order why it is that you don't think it's in derogation. It may be something simple, that it's consistent with the pattern of development in the surrounding neighborhood.
So what you're saying is for each of these, for this proposal of 413 Hammond, the site's an appropriate location for the addition because.
And again, Clemens is very good about that, although, again, sometimes you're sort of got to be a mind reader here, and it doesn't bother me in the least if we get to the council table and you decide you don't like that finding or you want an additional finding. That's exactly what you should be doing.
Okay. Well, I think we have been good about this, but the idea is on the findings, we have a statement with the standards and it ends it with a one sentence or paraphrase or partial sentence because of why. And then the changes are subject to the following conditions. And then the new sections, conditions precedent to the issuance of building permits and the issuance of occupancy permits. Do people like the formatting here? Are concerned about it?
So it's basically just means that those are the Welch conditions that go into every memo and you don't have to dive into them?
Yes. In other words, it's a vehicle to tell the homeowner, you've got to do these things.
Right. This is your roadmap. You've got to answer.
But the way we've been writing it currently, it gets mixed in and, you know, it's jumbled and we're saying, hey, these are the conditions for this one and this is what you're going to do for it no matter what.
I like the ongoing conditions because that's easy for enforcement.
Okay. John, does that work for you? You're the guy who's stuck with these things. Does it make sense?
No, I like the clearly two things.
Okay.
Building conditions.
Okay.
And then if you need it for
ongoing. What about one for those people who have looked at provision? That's not really ongoing, but looked at provision.
That could be another
category. I think we can put those in the special conditions for the project, though.
Yeah.
You don't have many of them.
I do. It's again.
Is this an ongoing?
Yeah.
Well, the look back wouldn't be on. It's not ongoing. I mean, the ongoing would be the ones that are going to go on forever and ever.
You have to maintain the landscape in good condition.
Yeah, and you've got to maintain the facade the way it's shown. You know,
sometimes you have an after a year, you have to do X, and you have to do Y.
Right, and I think we need to, with those particular ones, look in, let's take an accessory apartment. An ongoing condition is obviously going to be every year you have to file with inspectional services that, in fact, is still residing at that place as the owner. The look back provisions for traffic are going to be really probably limited to really major developments. And I'll tell you, we've got so many conditions that are going into that sort of board order that I don't think we'll ever be able to get to a rote type of order for those.
Tonight, I want to give Jake a few minutes to talk about the survey, but I want to just talk very briefly about the timeline. That's the last page here that we've gotten. One place it seems to me we can try to improve on the timeline without a lot of work is special permit application is filed now. Does it go right away to the clerk's office? How does that work?
It's filed in the clerk's office.
And then you put it on the docket for the next meeting for me to assign a public hearing. Do we have to go through that level of formality of assigning a public hearing in that manner? Or is there a way we can cut that down?
I think the rules of the board actually require the board to vote to put it on a public hearing. I have to check the rules, but I think it's in the rules. Although I can tell you that given a particular application, things have been set down for public hearings without going to the board knowing that everybody is going to set it down. So you've got to get the advertisement in this week, and the meeting for the board is next week. So there have been instances where we have put the advertisement in, even though it hasn't been formally set down for public hearing.
My point is this. This is a point of delay, and I don't know what, I mean, I find just assigning the public hearing completely gross. So I wonder if we could change our own rule, as it were, not to have a signed public hearing.
I think that's fine. I do think there ought to be, and not even talk to this consultation to look at what your schedule's like to figure out what the next really sensible public hearing
schedule.
And that's fine.
I'll search this. I mean, I it's worked very well so far. I mean, if there's a question, now you'll call me.
Okay.
But can
could there be like a standing approval of assignments of public hearing as long as all the requirements have been filed? Like, can we create a board order that says that?
You can do it. You can put it in your rules. I'd like it to be in the rules because the procedure for special permits is Article, I think, 10, maybe it's 11 now, of the rules, and I think it's appropriate to put that kind of relief in the rules.
You can start with David Olson, with Rita, and probably Lyle, since he's our guru in all things procedural. But when you talk to them, you can say that it was our collective will.
Oh, my.
Mine, I don't care. You can get in trouble.
Mark and Ruthann.
Ruthann is neutral.
But it's all good.
No, because I don't want this to be seen as some end around on a process. I think we're just trying to make this more efficient. So let me just follow that up. If it comes in and you get to assign it, okay, does that speed up the process then for sending out the office?
Yeah.
How much?
Significantly. Sometimes there's let's say they file on the Monday of the council meeting.
Mm-hmm.
The next one won't be for 2 weeks.
Okay.
Whereas I could assign it for 2 weeks and get the notices out the same day.
And how much time do you need to get the notices out?
2 weeks.
Okay.
That's
a huge potentially. I mean, we could have a 3 week delay.
Yeah.
Between, if it's 3 weeks between council meetings, that's a huge difference.
Yes. The question though, when it's filed, you get all the documents from the petitioner. Planning department report already done?
No. This is the critical time period that our staff has to get the review done and consult with other departments. So that is probably the one area I don't want to shorten much beyond 30 days. I know I can always say this is a huge project. I want to schedule this out a month and a half away for a public hearing, but oftentimes there's a lot of pressure to have the public hearing too quickly, and it's really important to the staff.
So what you're saying, so that's what my question was. While we're simply going through the motions we're required to assign a public hearing and posted before. Simultaneously, the planning department is doing a piece of work that's feeding into that.
Right, and you have 10 applications plus everything
else. Okay, so here's how I suggest we do it then. The special permit comes in, Nadia knows what our schedule looks like for the upcoming 6 weeks or so. Why not talk to you or whomever you want to assign to it, you know, probably not every day, but a couple times a week or more, and say, this just came in. What's realistic for an assignment date for the public hearing?
Yeah. I mean, most people tend to file right before the filing deadline. So we don't
what do you mean right before the filing deadline?
So there's a deadline once a month, typically, of when the agenda needs to be finalized for referral to the board and the...
But we're trying to get rid of that. I mean, that's the whole point. If you file... we're going to try to change the rules so you can file and Nadia can start the process and you can start the process.
I think that what I'm hearing, correct me if I'm wrong, what I'm hearing is that, like it or not, there's behavior on the part of the sisters and their representatives that they time it such that they can have the most amount of time to get their thing ready and then they hand it off to you and you need that 2 weeks to reveal it. A little bit more.
But what deadline would there be now?
Yeah, there'd be no deadline.
There'd be no deadline.
Well, they'd still be thinking about when it's going to be taken out. So they might just move forward 2 weeks forward, right?
Then you'd meet three times a month.
Yeah.
I would say this. I think we're going to try to keep the big commercial projects for the first one, and try to do the residential on the second and leftover on the fourth. But if we get something that comes in on the first of the month, why make somebody wait 45 or 60 days?
So I'm trying to make sense of this. I don't know of a community, and it's not a community that I work in anyway, where there aren't posted deadlines. And where you're not real clear what the deadline is for each one of the meetings going forward. And you can choose, when you want to have your thing ready.
You're saying make it 2 weeks before whatever's going to happen, make that a deadline.
Whatever works best, but the deadlines are also clearly a way for the staff to organize their time overall. And I appreciate that we're trying to speed up the process for petitioners, constituents, but I think we should be, I'm not sure I understand all of the pieces, but I do see that the deadlines are a way for staff to organize their time.
I
know what's coming.
I appreciate that, but if the criticism we're hearing from the public is our process is taking a long time, and if we really owe it to ourselves to very carefully look at what we're doing internally, so we can make that process shorter. And if we're delaying it by 3 or 4 weeks for somebody, that seems very significant. So I think we need to discuss this much further.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we're going to complete it. I really want to stay talking. But let's pick up on this at our next discussion. Give some more thought internally to workload issues in the department, how that would get affected. Talk to David about that, because I do think we need to be sensitive to that. Okay? Make sense? Jake, you're on. Survey. I gave the 30-second summary that you gave me on my ride out, but I didn't know.
So, purpose of this, again, was to collect our net promoter score for benchmarking so we can reevaluate in a year or two's time, and also to do a gap analysis, meaning figuring out where are areas that are very important to people, but they're not satisfied in how they're being served. 22 responses out of about 100 and how many emails are you? 130. So I would recommend that, I actually was impressed by that response rate, actually. But I would recommend that we scrape those 22 and then resend it out, because there's kind of a spike the first day as people can open it, and then after that it drops off. Probably a lot of bias in that, meaning that people who had a negative experience are more likely to respond. It's just the way it always is with customer feedback, so keep that in mind. Net promoter score, we have a negative 38. Getting a stuff from is not popular. We couldn't charge people for it if you were a business. it's for benchmarking. So it doesn't matter. The absolute number doesn't matter. The next that we could do this again in a couple of years' time is very easily reproducible, and we could see have we gotten better or worse. So right now, it's just a number. The gap analysis to remind us of what we were trying to figure out. We wanted to see minimize the need to hire an attorney was one. Minimize the time between the first visit to City Hall and the beginning of the public hearing. Minimize the time spent during the public hearing. Maximize the utility of the advice they're getting from the city agencies, and minimize the tension they have with neighbors. Our biggest opportunity point by the gap analysis, meaning what was most important and they were least satisfied with, the biggest gap, was the time between the first visit to City Hall and the beginning of the public hearing. So that looks like steps 2 and 3 on this chart.
But we don't know if that is how long it takes them to get a survey, or...
No, it's just...
We have no idea what...
It is just the opportunity, it's not the solution for it. Mm-hmm.
So then we've been talking mostly about trying to shorten up that time period and raise the caveat earlier that, you know, there's all kinds of stuff that could be in the way of somebody moving forward, that surveyors are one of the worst. But it could also be that you have to do documentation for the Historic Commission or the Conservatory of
So I would also throw in that that's the biggest opportunity point for us to improve. The most important thing overall to them was the advice that they get from city agencies, and they're actually pretty happy with feedback they're getting from the agency. So that's a bright spot for us. The comments were interesting to read as they always are. I think we were at one point called finalists.
Yeah. The counselors. So you were saying that people
grab
a great
right
in
first. That's right. But it actually
has fine
with the counselors. You can take a look at this. You got 120 people who were absolutely satisfied and 20 something with that. Why don't you started that way saying, you know, only the
staff or the people.
No, but it was fun. The comments, and I just read over them, and you get, obviously everyone's welcome to read over them. It reinforces, I think, what the gap analysis shows, which is that the length of time and the complexity in step 2 and 3, I think, is the biggest.
Did people give us permission to talk to them?
Yeah, we actually had 11 people who said, no, sorry, 10. One of them left me, but 10 of them said that they would be happy to talk.
So, do you want to do that maybe with Nadia?
I think it's
helpful. I think it's helpful to have it.
I'd be happy to participate in that since I'm sort of a big person in overseeing the process.
Oh, sorry, nine of them.
All of them had it.
Share that initiative with Alexandra and Nadia, because I think that would cover, clerk side, planning side, and council side, and, you know, see if you can set telephone interviews with folks, 15 minutes or so.
Yeah, at least get their perspective on it.
Yeah.
I know which permits they've got pending.
Hopefully they don't have any time
I don't think there's a rush to that, but any information that we can glean from people I think is useful.
What I would suggest doing is that we wait for more responses to come in, and then we find the people whose responses match up with what we decide is the biggest opportunity, and then talk to those people.
You know what, I'm going to defer to you as to how we structure it. So we need to adjourn to give everyone ready to kind of get started. I'd like to reconvene in a few more weeks. Can we all look at calendars really quickly? And John, I do want to get to inspectional services, but
and
IT as well. And if you can make a note for both of us, that's each other. So we meet again. The 15th of November, does that work for people?
The 15th of November.
It's Tuesday?
Election day, we're not
meeting. Does the 15th work for everyone?
Are we meeting?
It works for me. At 5:30.
5:30 on the 15th? Okay. Corey, does that work for you?
No, I don't think so.
Can you ask if Joe can be here, though? I think we'll want to ask Joe to be here for that.
It's not
going
to be really
much, Joe.
I'm
very, very
happy to come.
You've got
some new interest
for me. Right. Yeah, you should just call Joe a nice time. John, you work for you, the 15th?
Yes.
Okay. Everybody else, Arnie, Alexander?
Okay. Cool. Remember, I see you. Definitely want to have somebody represent.
Okay. All right, great. Thank you all very much. I hope everyone feels we're making some progress. All right, let's go. Okay.